Greetings, I'm Fred Zaspel. Welcome to another author interview here at Books at a Glance. Today we have Dr. Andy Nocelli with us again, this time to talk about a brand new book, How to Read a Book. That sounds like a book that we want at Books at a Glance. Andy, great to have you back. Thanks.
My pleasure, brother.
Okay, you obviously knew that Mortimer Adler had a book by this same title, a famous book. So, questions: why this book? What do you hope to accomplish with it? And how does it differ from Adler's famous book?
Yeah, let me just start with your last question. How does it differ? A lot of people are familiar with Mortimer Adler's book,
mm-hmm.
Read a Book. When I speak on this topic, I'll sometimes ask the crowd, so how many of you have read that book? And so almost everyone's heard of it, and very few people in proportion have actually read it. It's a long
right.
book.
It's of course, it is.
My first, I'll just do this briefly in seven ways. My book is written by a Christian. I'm a Christian. When Mortimer Adler wrote his book, he was professing to be a pagan philosopher. So that's a big difference. I just think about the world differently. Second, my book I wrote specifically for Christians. So he obviously wasn't writing for Christians. Third, my book is broader in scope than Adler's, in that he is preoccupied primarily with how to get all the information you can out of a book, and especially to read culture, literature, not so much reading for pleasure. And I'm all about reading for pleasure. I think that's part of why we read. My book is just more accessible. His writing style is a little harder. His target audience is a little more high culture. Five, my book's more concise. Mine's like 200 pages, but it's, you know, with nice line spacing, and his is crammed on the page, and it's like it's over 400 pages.
Yeah.
So six, mine's more personal. So I use lots of anecdotes and tell stories, and he's more like a objective old school professor, which is fine, but just a different style. And then seven, I think my book is more relevant. His book first came out in 1940, and he updated it in 72 with another guy named Charles Van Doren. But even the second edition from 1972, that was over 50 years ago. And since that time, we've had an iPhone and a whole generation of technology, and people are thinking about reading in a lot of different ways, with ebooks and with audiobooks. So I try to address those sorts of questions that Adler doesn't touch.
Great. I'm going to have you give an overview of the book a little bit later, but let's work through some of the issues that you bring up.
Yeah.
First, why is it important to be a reader? And then in particular, why is it important for a Christian?
Yeah. When a missionary goes to a context of unreached peoples who don't have a written language, one of the first things they try to do is teach those people how to read and write. And why spend so much time on something that's so labor intensive? And the reason is God revealed himself to us with words in a book. So first and foremost reason to learn how to read well is so that we can understand what God has revealed to us about himself and about his world, about reality. And you can understand those truths without the ability to read. Many people in world history have not been able to read, and they've been able to know God. And be obedient followers, but they've been dependent on other people to read to them. They've had to hear from others. And this is a wonderful freeing ability to study on your own the words of God. What was your other question?
Why is it important to be a reader, and why is it important for a Christian?
So I guess
yeah, you did that. Yeah, good. All right. What do you have to say to common excuses? I don't have time to read. I don't like reading. Those kinds of things.
Yeah, you could say that about a lot of stuff. So the one that I don't have time to read, I would, if I was talking to a person who said it to me, I'd ask follow up questions. So what would you say are the most important things in your life to do? This can be really revealing. Is say, could you just here's a table of 7 days and mapped out in 24-hour segments. Let's just fill in your typical week. How are you spending your days? What are you doing? And can I see your phone? Because it's got a little feature on there that tells me how much time you're spending in certain apps. So that would help us fill this in. That would be really revealing.
Now you've gone to meddling.
Yeah. But I could do that with a student. And like often a freshman student comes to college is like, how do I do this? And you find out, oh, you're spending 15 hours a week playing video games and watching shows. And you think that's normal. You should just get rid of all that. And you've got a life.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. Very good. What advice do you have how to read? How can I best read?
Yeah, so I don't want to give away the whole book here, but they're ask four big questions: why, how, what, and when. And the
Yeah.
how question is probably the meatiest part of the book. And I think I give seven guidelines. But the guideline that is, I think, most unusual, meaning I haven't seen many others say this, and it's been revolutionary for me, is to teach people to read not at just one speed. So I've taught this to my daughters with their bikes. When they first learn to ride a bike, it's a one-speed bicycle. So when you're pedaling, whether you're going uphill, downhill, flat, it's always the same. And so going uphill is a little harder. But going downhill, you can go faster. So when they get a newer bike, like a 7-speed bike or a 14-speed bike, they learn, oh, so if I change these while I'm pedaling, it actually can become easier or harder depending on, and they learn the different options there. It's something like that with reading speeds. Sometimes when you're reading, you're cruising along and then you hit a spot that makes you slow way down. Maybe you reread. Did I understand that right? I do this a lot when I'm reading Puritans or like Jonathan Edwards or Stephen Charnock. I'm reading along and I think, I'm not sure I understand this. I'll go back, I'll slow down. It's like you're driving 60 miles an hour and you slow down to like five because of stop and go traffic. And yet there are other kinds of reading where I get a lot of new books like you do, Fred, because you run Books at a Glance. I cannot read all of them slowly. It's
Right.
impossible. There's not enough time in the day, in a lifetime to read them all. So what I'll do is I'll spend 1 to 2 minutes with the book, size it up. Who's the author? What's the topic? Is this something I want to come back to in the future? Is this something I'd want to commend to others? When you've been doing this for decades, you have a lot to work with here to
That's
size up
right.
a book, and you can survey a book very quickly. You can do it in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, half hour, an hour. So that skill of surveying is really important. So I divide into three different speeds or levels. I call it surveying. That's the one you can do the fastest. And then there's macro reading where you read every word, but you're moving. Like think, listen to an audiobook, maybe even on 1.5 speed. You're hearing every word, but you're moving. And then the slowest speed is micro reading, and there are different levels of that. But the idea is you're not just reading every word, you're studying it. You're marking it up diligently. You're slowing down in different spots. So I try to train my students to read at these different levels. And I think it trains them for a lifetime of reading, frees their conscience such that when they start a book, they don't have to read every word of it. If it's not a very good one, they don't have to finish it. They're tools. They're different ways to use tools.
Yeah, that's right. When I pick up a book, depending on how serious I am with it and how seriously I think I'm going to have to take it, I'll pick it up. I'll look at the title, subtitle. I'll look at the blurbs on the back, the descriptions of the book. I might read some of the endorsements. Look at the table of contents, and in no time, you've got a size pretty well of what you have. And then at that point, you start reading. But then again, there's reading, and there's reading, and I might do that same kind of overview with each chapter, and that's a very helpful way to zero in on what you have, I think.
You mentioned you looked at the blurbs. Sometimes people ask me, what's the point of blurbs on a book? It seems kind of self-promoting. It's like I have one friend who has said, I'm not going to blurb books anymore because it's participating in a culture of self-promotion. And I'm not trying to change his conscience on that matter, but I find blurbs helpful because I might not recognize the author, but if I
Right.
recognize, like if I saw your name, Fred, blurbing a book, I go, oh, I know Fred. I trust Fred. If he
Yeah.
likes this book, it's a good book.
Right.
That's the value of it. And
Right.
correspondingly, inversely, if you look at a book and it's a bunch of woke egalitarian,
Yeah,
whatever,
that's
it's
right.
like, oh, okay.
Right,
It
right.
tips you off.
Or and at some point, even if it's a list of people you've never heard of, you're wondering what world is this in, and
Right.
you don't know how to zero it in.
Yeah.
All right, what kind of books should we read, and how do we determine which kind of books?
Yeah, so I think Jean Vaith talks about three categories of books. So there's nonfiction, fiction, and poetry. Again, that's not a real clean distinction, but idea of different ways of communicating. And under nonfiction, I'd include theology, exegesis and theology, history, science, sociology, etc. Under fiction, I would want to emphasize the world's greatest stories. Some of the world's greatest literature is fiction, like Lord of the Rings or Chronicles of Narnia. And then poetry, that of the three categories, that's the one I read least outside the Bible. The Bible's about one-third poetry, so it's really
Yeah,
important.
that's right.
So po we think of poetry as rhyming. Ancient poetry is rhyming thoughts, not words. Those are the three basic categories.
Right. Good. What about the Christian who cares only to read Christian studies, biblical studies, that kinds of things? One, what do you have to say to that generally? And then two, how do you zero in on what best to read there?
Yeah. When I was working on a PhD under Don Carson at Trinity, I was a full-time student and I had three part-time jobs. And we just had our first baby. My wife's at home with Kara. I was so busy. And I remember we had over to our home Mike Bullmore. At the time, he was my pastor of Crossway Community Church. And we were at the dinner table. And he said, "Andy, what fiction are you reading?" And I thought my answer would please him. I said, "Oh, Mike, I don't have time for fiction. I'm so busy reading and I'm listening off all these commentaries and theology books. And it's like I don't have margin for that." And I thought, of course, he would understand. I think that's wise. And his response really threw me. He said something like, "Oh, Andy, you've got to read fiction." And I'm thinking, what? And I hadn't read fiction really since high school. So after high school, I went, unless I was required for classes, I went to college at an undergrad in Bible, right into an MA in Bible, a PhD in theology, and then I'm doing a second PhD in New Testament. Almost like for like age 18 to 30, it was like all Bible and theology. So this
Right.
was around 28. And he made me rethink my reading diet. And he argued that if you're reading good fiction, there's just like watching a movie, a story can be evil. So if the story is trying to pull your affections to root for sinful activities, like to root for someone to commit adultery, that's an evil story, whether a book or a movie. But if it's good fiction, it's portraying humanity, portraying man and his sin in a way that shows you that sin has consequences, that God is real and he's in control. Just like read through Genesis with your kids, realize that it's got a lot of
Yeah.
murder and sex and but it doesn't do it in a titillating way. So there's a lot of fiction that is valuable and that it helps you better understand people and God's world, the way God made it. It's like the difference between reading Steve Willems' New Systematic Theology and reading The Lord of the Rings is significant, but you could say, in a sense, also, even though Tolkien's Roman Catholic, the worldviews are complementary in many ways. So Wellam is arguing God's meticulously sovereign, and Tolkien's showing you here's what that looks like in a story. So there's things that stories can do that captivate your imagination and help you see things that are true in ways that just laying out theology real objectively doesn't do. And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to minimize theology. I'm a theologian. This is my full-time job. This is what I write. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I'm also saying it's valuable to include fiction in your diet. It'd be like saying, "I'm going to eat only meat."
Yeah.
Well, other good things that God created that are good for you. I don't think you need to choose just one thing.
Yeah. All right. Talk to us about reading commentaries. I think I noticed only two on the list that you make. Tell us about
Oh,
that and how to select.
the list that I made, you're talking about the appendix of like 40 of my favorite
I think
books.
so. Yeah.
Okay, so you try to make a list of 40. All right, so if we have similar libraries, if you pick any book in the Bible, I have anywhere from 100 to 300 commentaries on it. I have lots of commentaries. I love commentaries. I read them all the time. I'm pro commentary. In that list, I was just thinking, what are the most significant major works I've read in my life that I would commend to others? And I think I chose Doug Moo on Romans and Don Carson on Gospel of John. But there's so many other good ones. The value of a commentary, especially for a preacher and teacher, is you benefit from someone else's more diligent study in the text, or maybe not more diligent, but they're studying the text to help you see what's really there, and you can evaluate whether it's helpful or not. So when I'm preaching, when I'm exegeting, when I'm writing, commentaries are just such a gift from God. It's imagine like Moo's commentary on Romans. He spent his lifetime, decades studying Romans.
Right.
And for whatever it costs now, let's say it's
Why
50
wouldn't you
bucks.
want that? Yeah.
I mean, you can benefit from so much. So it's a huge gift. And I don't know if there's been a time in the history of the world where we've had more high quality
Yeah,
commentaries
that's
available to
right.
us. So
That's right.
I think John Calvin had about 400 books in his library total.
Yeah.
So what are we doing compared to Calvin? It's very humbling to think that man was so productive and
Yeah.
for what he
Pretty
had.
good. Interesting. When I started out, ever since the beginning, I've read scads of commentaries, but at the beginning, it was only with reference to what I was teaching and preaching. And it didn't occur to me for some years to recognize that, hey, there'd be valuable to sitting down and reading a commentary on a portion of scripture that I'm not necessarily planning to preach through soon, and widen my acquaintance with scripture that way. And that was a tremendous help when you start doing that. You get a closer acquaintance with scriptures and so on. Okay, give us some practical advice for getting started. There are some listening, let's say, who are not opposed to reading. They really like the idea of reading, but they have a difficult time getting in the swing of it. So how do we get going?
Well, if I'm talking to someone one-on-one, I'd want to ask, are you reading the Bible every day? So that'd be the main thing, is get into a habit, a routine, where you're not asking yourself, should I read the Bible today? But it's like most of us have routines where there are things we do that we don't think about doing. We don't debate whether to do them, like eating or brushing your teeth or whatever it is. Your routine is usually involves eating in some way. The Bible intake should be like that. So I recommend that it be one of the first things you do in the day, just because I know that I can't say that you're sinning if you don't do that, but it's when you're fresh, that way you don't miss it if something else comes up, and it's the first thing to influence you for the day. It's just a lot of good reasons to start with Bible. So I want to start by encouraging people to either read or listen by an audiobook to scripture every day without exception. And it's just routine, mark it down, do it. And once that habit is formed, which it takes about, some say, 66 days to make a habit routine, to habituate it. Once that's there, then we could talk about, all right, how can we move beyond this? What are other kinds of books that could be helpful to you? And what are the times of days and the periods of time in your schedule when those would be most efficient's the wrong word. When are you most likely to benefit
Productive.
from those? Yeah. So like I would prefer to read a story before I go to bed, as opposed to in the morning. Like in the morning, I'm ready for the hardest stuff. In the evening, I'd prefer to relax, wind down. So I would prefer not to read a tough theologian right before I go to bed. That's why I might listen to a story, one of Sherlock Holmes stories, short stories. And so then it's a matter of figuring out, okay, what do you want to read? What would be valuable? Where are your holes? And it's good to think through, what are the best old books that I haven't read that I'd want to read? And don't just read all of the latest stuff that came out in the last 6 months. And then you want to talk about, do you feel obligated to press through a book that you find dry, boring, unhelpful? And just, I'd want to free people up to, you don't have to keep going with that if it's unhelpful.
Right.
Unless it's
Absolutely.
the Bible, I mean, move on. Life's too short to kill your read. You're like, if you hate a book, you're not gonna want to read it every day, and it's gonna slow you down. And that means you're not gonna get to other stuff until you. So put it aside and just be
Go
ready.
on.
What Alan Jacobs calls reading at whim, meaning read what you want to read. If you're walking with the Lord, so like Psalm 37:4, delight yourself in the Lord and he'll give you the desires of your heart. If you're walking with the Lord, read whatever you want. So you should be wanting holy things. You shouldn't be reading smut. Then it just kind of opens it all. If you have a reading list, that's why I gave you a short reading list, by the way, just 40. And this is, I qualified it. Like, here's what I find helpful. Maybe you will too. List that Adler has at the back of his book makes it sound like if you don't work your way through this list, you are basically an illiterate,
An ignoramus, yeah.
person. I don't want to like force broccoli on people. I want you to enjoy it.
Right, very good. All right, you probably have some experience with this. How do you instill in children a love for reading?
There's an appendix in the four appendices, and I think number two is called 22 Tips for Cultivating a Culture of Reading for Your Children. So my wife has done more of this than I have, but we worked together on this, and I won't go through all 22 here, but the gist is, it'd be like saying, how do you cultivate a love for the Boston Celtics and your children, or whatever your favorite sports team is? I mean, so much of it is you have an exuberant enjoyment in something, and your kids just follow that.
It's more caught than taught.
Exactly. So if there are books everywhere in your home, and you're always reading them, and reading them to them, and you're commending them, you're giving them as gifts, and it just a culture develops of, oh, books are great.
That's
So
right.
that's the main thing.
Excellent. Good. I was interested to see in the book that you have, I think it's the appendix, one of the appendices on how to advice for those with dyslexia and reading. Anything you want to mention about that?
I think that's in the appendix on children, where I share that of our four children, one of them has dyslexia. And what we did is, when she was really young, we hired a reading tutor who specializes in that. And she worked with us. And it just helped our daughter break through and get over the hump there so that she loves reading. People with
Good.
dyslexia can feel like they're dumb or
Oh
they're
yeah. Oh
slow,
yeah. Yeah.
but some of the most brilliant people in the world have dyslexia. It has nothing to do with your intelligence. So there are ways to work with that. And thank God for audiobooks. Those are also.
Yeah, that's right. Very good. All right, before I let you go, give us a brief overview of the book so we know what to expect.
It's basically four questions. Why should you read? I'm forgetting the order. Why should you read? How should you read? And then what should you read? And when should you read? So those are the four big questions. And then for under each of those, I unpack them with different aspects of the answers and give lots of tips along the way. Basically, it's a book that should encourage those who are already readers and they want to go deeper and get advice from a fellow reader. And they can also, I think the book is also helpful for people who are like, I know I should read more, but I haven't really enjoyed it and don't know what to do, that kind of person. And also, I wrote it. Hopefully, I was thinking that there might be high schoolers, college students, graduate students whose teachers require them to read it. And they'll probably think, oh, I have to read a book on how to read a book. This is so dumb. But I'm hopeful that they start working through it. They're like, oh, this is actually helpful.
Yeah, they really is. I think it will be. I think many people will find this very useful. We're talking to Dr. David and Andrew. I'm not used to calling you by your full name. I was going
Call
to
me
do it.
Andy. Yeah.
Andy Nocelli, about his new book, How to Read a Book. It's excellent, really helpful advice to make your life enriched and more productive in reading. Thanks a lot, Andy.
My
Thanks for talking
pleasure.
to you too. All right.